you for joining us.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the rest of the East Africa region this Friday, July 5th, 2024. South Sudanese delegates at the Nairobi talks say all is well.
For them, not be carried away by what is usual in the social media. And when we came last time here, I stated this, that the people of South Sudan, please, don't follow whatever appears in the social media.
And some residents of Yei Town say they are living in fear.
Has been happening actually. Let me say this is the second or third week that I think most of the youth in these areas does not longer live in their houses.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The commissioner of Yei County says a splinter group of the Rebel National Salvation Front attacked the outskirts of Yei Town on Thursday. Some residents of the town say they have been living in fear after sporadic shooting continued Friday. For VOA News, Dennis Longonyi reports for VOA from Kampala.
The residents started hearing gunshots Thursday evening and they carried into Friday morning. Longa Joseph, a resident of one of Yei's suburbs, says residents were terrified.
It took something like that. Started for 5 minutes and the sporadic gunshots calmed down. Now then reached up to where I am in Haitara. I think those could be isolated shots now because the main shots came from Haidem and the Haitish. Some of them reached Haitish, but their response is from this side of Haitara,
Yei resident Lasu Robert says youth no longer stay in the outskirts of the town because of fear of arrest.
It has been happening actually. Let me say this is the second or third week that I think most of the youth in these areas does not longer sleep in their houses. They spend the day there and then in the evening they move towards the town.
Cyrus Kanyikwa, the commissioner of Yei County, says the situation now is calm after the South Sudan People's Defense Forces confronted the attackers.
For many months or years, there have not been some kind of gunshots like what happened yesterday, so there was this kind of fear, but eventually the situation became calm. You know, the National Salvation Front is split into so many similar groups of about four groups, and because they are split, it seems like their forces have become few. Most of their forces have come out to join the government.
Robert says the commissioner should address the insecurity in the city and on the roads.
One of our staffs was caught while she was still taking shower, and she has to hide inside the bathroom for some few minutes. And that was as early as 7. If I was the commissioner, I would really declare that there are issues in the county. In my opinion, as a humanitarian worker, I think the situation is deteriorating.
Kanyikwa says NAS forces and their sympathizers were arrested along the road to Lasso.
Members of the National Salvation Front's tactics are those tactics that they stay with the people. By the day, they are just normal citizens. They stay with people and they hide their guns over the day, pretend to be farming. And therefore, there was some information that leads for arrests of such kind of people.
General Lul Ruai, the spokesperson of South Sudan People's Defense Forces, or SSPDF, says there were no casualties in the attack.
There were 9 p.m. at night. We had a company miners that was conducting night patrols on the outskirts of Yei Town, and in the process of conducting the night patrols, they came across about 3 rebels from NAS that were smoking marijuana at a place called Injeciri. The rebels were very quick to open fire on our night patrol. They responded with fire and the rebels fled. There were no casualties on both sides.
Last month, General Kenny Loburon, who deserted the NAS movement led by General Thomas Cirillo, issued a stern warning saying commuters using the Juba Yei road traveled at their own risk. NAS has not issued a statement on Thursday's night's shooting in the outskirts of Yei Town. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Longonyi reporting from Kampala.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuilweth says the new peace initiative in Nairobi is progressing well. For VOA News, Juliana Shapai reports from Juba.
During a briefing Friday on the Nairobi Peace Talks called the Tumaini Peace Initiative, South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwei questioned that people should not trust unverified posts on social media about the talks.
What we are negotiating now is how best can we strengthen implementation mechanisms? How best can we implement the implementation mechanisms so that we implement the agreement? So for that, not be carried away by what is usual in the social media. And when we came last time here, I stated this, that the people of South Sudan, please, don't follow whatever appears in the social media.
Albino Abbott is the head of the government delegation to the Nairobi talks and President Salva Kiir's special envoy. He says the government delegation, holdout groups and other stakeholders negotiating in Nairobi have agreed on 5 points.
What we have agreed in Nairobi with oppositions, trust and confidence building measures. That is a protocol by itself, economic recovery and management, which means we will have the accountability in the economy. Judiciary reform, transitional justice and accountability. Force, permanent ceasefire, security arrangement and reform. 5, humanitarian assistance. And the rest are pending and we are still negotiating. We are almost to reach an agreement with the opposition.
Martin Nabucha, South Sudan's Minister for Mining, is a member of the Tumaini Peace Initiative. He says the transitional government of national unity lacked a good mechanism and accountability. He says that slowed the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement.
When we signed the RRCs, we were alone. The international community did not come to aid us. So this time around, we said we must be in partnership with the international community. We must work together. We must rebuild our relationships so that they can support us as we walk this journey towards sustainable peace.
Makwei says the government, the opposition, and the negotiators at the Tumaini Peace Initiative have identified weak institutions and lack of funding are the two major issues slowing implementation of the 2018 peace agreement. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shapai in Juba.
Still on issues to do with the negotiations in Nairobi, a member of the People's Coalition for Civic Action says delegates at the Nairobi talks made some progress during the 2 months of negotiations. Rajab Mohandis says more needs to be done so that an agreement is signed by the holdout rebel groups and other stakeholders at the Nairobi talks.
There has been some progress on the issue of security that they talked about, especially with regard to establishing a military commission to oversee the security arrangements or the implementation of reorganization of the security sector. And there has also been progress made on issues of confidence building to try to get the parties to build trust and confidence necessary to work together, and especially in terms of implementation of the outcomes of the Tumaini Initiative. And there is also an understanding on other areas that were not initially on the agenda. For example, implementation modalities. It has been agreed that one major issue with the peace process, especially the RRCs, is the issue of failure of implementation. And so the consensus is that the Tumaini Initiative should help to produce modalities for implementation such that the outcomes do not also get stuck.
You have talked about all the positive aspects of the talks. What are some of the hurdles that are facing the delegates there, both the government and the holdout group and other stakeholders like the civil society?
Issues that are outstanding are we have the issue of constitution making, which is a major issue of the negotiation. The stakeholders, and particularly us from the PCCA and the opposition as well, suggest that the constitution making process should commence in Kenya and then be taken to South Sudan. So it should be in two phases, that it starts, like it started here in Kenya and then it's moved to South Sudan. And there is no consensus on this as yet. There's no agreement on the issue of the venue where it starts. The government delegation wants it to start in Juba, And the other delegations think that this process has taken 12 years and has not made progress, and we have not gotten a constitution as yet. So getting it to start in South Sudan might also just follow the same process.
Today in Juba, the Minister of Information told journalists that they are going to consider adding more people from the other stakeholders into the Constitutional Review Commission. So you are telling me it should start in Kenya, but the government has already jumped the gun to say they are going to include some of you in the commission.
Most of the aspects that they shared with the public were actually about the position of the government delegation. And that is what is being negotiated. The government delegation has its own position, and the opposition and the stakeholders also share their own positions and views on these issues. And the negotiation is about reconciling the different views to find a common ground.
You guys have been there for some times, and according to you, there is progress on some issues. The government is also reporting that they have made progress on some of the sticky issues. But how long is this going to run?
It is difficult to estimate correctly at this point. But if we look back, we may recall that the 2015 agreement took close to 2 years, and the RCS currently, the agreement in the country, the negotiations took about 9 months. And so we have been here for about 2 months already. And so it may not be accurate to estimate, but the consensus is that this process should be tracked to reach an agreement as soon as possible. And so it explains why the delegates have been here and working concertedly to try to reach a common ground and agreement on most of the agenda issues being discussed.
That's Rajab Mohandis, a member of the People's Coalition for Civic Action. He spoke to me via WhatsApp from the venue of the Nairobi Peace Talks earlier today. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, more university staff walk off their jobs. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Teaching staff at the University of Bahr al-Ghazal took to the streets on Thursday to demand 8 months of unpaid salaries. The Secretary General of the University academic staff says lecturers have walked off their jobs until the government pays them. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Chanting no pay, no work, the teaching staff at the University of Bahr al-Ghazal staged a peaceful protest asking the government to pay their salaries. Joseph Lualdario, chairman of the Teaching Staff Association at the University of Bahr al-Ghazal, says the government should listen to the cries of civil servants.
Number one, urgent payment of 8 months from November and December 2023. Number two, immediate payment of annual flight ticket allowance arrears from 2019-2024. Number three, urgent payment of medical allowances from 2019-2024. Number four, adjustment of salary scale in the fiscal year budget of 2024-2025 according to the current bank exchange rate of Central Bank of the Republic of South Sudan.
Last week, academic staff members at Drumbeg University of Science and Technology took to the streets demanding payment. Lual says the Ministry of Finance should pay university employees.
We went on the streets of Wau Town and we were demanding government, in the national level, especially Minister of Finance, to pay all these demands that we have narrated before. Therefore, it will not be the last, but more are coming. And we want to tell the Minister of Finance that we need our money now, not tomorrow.
Adam Thabo, chairperson of the High-Level Committee of Academic Staff Associations at the five public universities, says support staff at the universities will stay at home until the government pays them.
Yes, the General Assembly was contacted, and then the General Assembly agreed that they lay down the tool for definite pressurizing. And this why today there is not even one of the staff in the system. The exam already started on Monday.
Simon Ngor, Director General of Information and Communications at South Sudan's Finance Ministry, says the salary issue is a nationwide problem.
But the salary of universities is including all with the salary of the citizen of South Sudan. According to the financial crisis we are in now, we don't know when will we come in. This thing need to be tackled by the senior management of the government of South Sudan, not the people of finance.
In May, Finance Minister Awo Daniel Chuang told lawmakers the government is unable to pay civil servant salaries because the year-old Sudan conflict has disrupted oil exports, so the government can't collect oil revenue. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Nairobi, where Kenyan President William Ruto has ordered significant cuts in the federal budget and other government reforms to pay off a crushing debt burden. The move is seen as a concession to popular disapproval of a tax bill that sparked weeks of violent protests. VOA's Nairobi chief Mariama Diallo reports.
Following weeks of protest, during which dozens of people were reportedly killed, Kenya President William Ruto withdrew a finance bill intended to raise $2.7 billion in revenues, most of it from tax increases, to pay off debts, and announced a compromise. Speaking to The Nation Friday, Ruto said the new plan is to cut $1.39 billion from the budget and borrowing the difference. To make it work, Ruto said his government has taken actions with immediate effect.
47 state corporations with overlapping and duplicating functions will be dissolved. The decision to fill the position of cabinet of chief administrative secretaries is hereby suspended. The number of advisors in government shall be reduced by 50% within the public service with immediate effect. Budget lines providing for the operations of the Office of the First Lady, the spouse of the Deputy President, and the Prime Cabinet Secretary will be removed.
And there's more.
Public servants who attain the retirement age of 60 shall be required to immediately proceed on retirement with no extensions. The purchase of new motor vehicles by the government is suspended for 12 months, except for security agencies. All non-essential travel by state and public officers is hereby suspended.
Some of the actions were on a list of demands by protesters. Ruto also says that he has appointed an independent task force to carry out a comprehensive forensic audit over the country's public debt.
This audit will provide the people of Kenya with clarity on the extent and nature of our debt, how public resources have been expended, and will also recommend proposals for managing our public debt in a manner that is sustainable and does not burden future generations.
Nearly 40 people have died and 360 people have been injured nationwide since the protests started 3 weeks ago, according to Kenya National Commission on Human Rights. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Dangers to media covering environment beat are rising. Environmental reporters are paying a heavy price to get their story, including violent attacks, detainment or arrest, and sometimes death. In Africa, the coverage of illegal poaching, mining and pollution increases risks of attack or threat. Robin Guess reports on what reporters face.
Ghana's Joy News covers illegal gold mining destroying the country's forest.
Abandoned pits and mining settlements dot the road leading into the remaining part of the forest.
When journalist Erastu Sasari Dankor went to investigate, armed men in uniform confronted him and his crew.
They wrestled with my camera technician for the camera and broke it in the process. They made him delete every footage we had on the camera. They smashed our windscreen, punched my driver several times in the face. And it was horrible.
Ghana's 2022 Journalist of the Year, Asari Dankor, documents the environmental cost of illegal gold mining. His stories expose the connections of illegal mining to the spread of disease, deforestation, and widespread pollution in rivers and streams. The International Federation of Journalists finds reporting on poaching, illegal mining, and illegal logging is hazardous across Africa, but legal mining is also problematic.
Journalists who report on the activities of these big corporations are seriously threatened. They are seriously threatened, and they are not actually allowed to report on such activities, especially when it concerns environmental degradation.
Tomasi says environmental journalists face attacks, detention, and arrest. And in Africa, he adds, dangers exist in every nation with valuable and exploitable resources.
They are subjected to serious threats, which actually force them to abandon the line of thought or the reports that they are engaging.
In its May report, Press and Planet in Danger, UNESCO finds 749 journalists and media outlets attacked globally from 2009 to 2023, and 44 reporters slain for their environmental coverage.
It shows it's a planetary problem. Journalists were trying to uncover corruption or whatever related to environmental issues, they are being attacked everywhere.
According to UNESCO, attacks against environmental reporters are rising sharply.
The number of attacks, different sorts of attacks, they are concentrated or they are higher in the last 5 years. So it's not only that it's a lot, but it's showing that there is unfortunately a trend of a growing number of attacks or violations.
For journalists on the ground, the risks are ever present.
And so constantly I face danger. I face a lot of danger during my work. Armed people, people who wouldn't want the truth to come out. And so I must say that every trip is a risk.
Asari Dankor says he's only armed with a camera, a drone, and his crew, but adds he cannot let the violence stop him from revealing the environmental damage being done. Robin Guest, VOA News.
It's time for us to hear from our listeners what we are doing well and what we should do better. And we start with Adesimon in Yei River County, who writes, "Hi, John, I'm very disappointed with the National MPs of South Sudan for passing the National Security Service bill blindly against the citizens of South Sudan, never knowing that the same law they passed will one day be used for arrest, torture, and detain some of them. Therefore, I'm appealing to President Salva Kiir not to sign the bill. The MPs should work for the interests of South Sudanese and not their own interests." Gabriel Garang from Bor Right, "Hello, VOA. The National Security Bill passed by the Transitional Legislative Assembly is a naked intimidation upon the rights of the citizens. Civil servants and organized forces have not gone unpaid for 1 year, which is unbelievable. South Sudan government is composed of heartless leaders. What South Sudan needs is a statesmanship such that citizens are bailed out of the catastrophic crisis." Another listener from Torit, who calls himself Oroto, David Oroto, writes, "Hello, John Tanza and Voice of America. First of all, I thank Voice of America for always standing with the voiceless majority of South Sudanese. by bringing out their voices to be heard across the world. Yes, John, may I know what roles are the MPs doing to the people of South Sudan? Imagine, how can they vote overwhelmingly to support the National Security Bill that allows the National Security Service to arrest without a warrant of arrest? Imagine they voted for that law to punish the people of South Sudan whom they are representing. Chol Philip Kwang in Bor Jungle Estate writes, "Hello, John. The passing of the National Security Bill was an intimidation and a disgrace to the people of South Sudan." Balash Jerome from Yambio Western Equatorial State writes, "Thank you, VOA. Thank you, John Tanza, producers, engineers, and Matthias Samuel, our reporter. Sincerely, the demand from civil servants to the government to pay, especially the academic staff, is genuine. They should pay academic staff so that others can be motivated to take that profession and boost education system." Another listener who refers to himself as Kidor from Eastern Equatoria writes, "Upon hearing the extension of another 24 months of elections, I became demoralized. We are tired of this government. They just want to stay in power for another 24 months. I must correct this listener. There was no announcement of extension of the government to 24 months. Please get your facts correct." Hello, VOA. Another listener writes, "I am KK Star from Rhino Camp in Uganda. I'm so glad listening to Voice of America. I am a South Sudanese from Central Equatoria. I really need peace so that I can return home." Another listener writes, "Good evening. I am Dara from Uganda Refugee Camp. My question is, are refugees going to be allowed to vote in the upcoming elections? And at least 4 or 5 countries should be called to provide security and witness the election to avoid cheating. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the Voice of America or this program. Keep your comments coming. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We shall sample some of your comments every Friday. We now leave you with the song Africa Motto by C. Sengo. We've been listening to C. Sengo and the song Africa Motto. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Helen, we wish you a lovely evening. If you or your family member miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com. Remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.